There's three methods that could cover probably 95% of any research situation you find yourself in.
These are originally live chat sessions that I held, and you can join them in the future on sales.n.pixels on Instagram. My name is Koji, and this is Sales and Pixels.
So today, my guest is Varun Murugjanson. He is a head of research for Apple and Banana, where he is in a mission to democratize research, sharing UX research skills, methods, concepts to educate both and interested people in UX research. So Varun is a research manager also at Best Buy. Prior, he was a researcher at Facebook. If you're interested in research, I think this is going to be a great opportunity to learn more about research and how, let's say, if you work in a startup and maybe you're thinking about how can I include research in my process, he's exactly the right person to talk about this. Yeah, thanks for joining me today.
Glad to be here.
Awesome. Varun, first of all, I was given an introduction about yourself and some of the work you've been doing. And we talked a little bit before, and one thing that came to my mind was the fact that you came from a very intellectual family. You know, your dad had a PhD in mathematics, your mother a PhD in physics. How was it growing up in a family like this? It's like such an amazing story. I'm curious about it.
Right. First off, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. Growing up, it was fantastic. Because I think with some of the harder sciences, physics, economics, statistics, I think people are scared. And because there is a lot of rigor, a lot of abstract concepts, a lot of theorems, a lot of formulas. But what my parents, what they both really try to instill in us is creativity. My father would always talk about never attack a problem head on. Can you sneak up on it? Can you come at it from a different perspective? And he had a very unique way of looking at that. He would say, if you're ever frustrated or stressed with a problem, why don't you go ahead and do the laundry? And as a kid, I'm like, this is a clever way to get me to do the chores. But what he was trying to teach us is that when you're not directly focused on the problem, your brain's going to work on it in the background, right? It's going to start to spin on it. And then when you go back to approach something, you're going to be more creative. You're going to see it from a new lens. So that's like the big thing that both of them have taught me is being creative. Even the hardest science, even with quantitative research, you want to be creative in your approach and make it fit the problem. And so that was a huge learning that they try to really give us.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. It kind of reminds me of the Karate Kid, you know, when when the master says, like, you know, go wash the car, go do something else. Yeah. I love that. It's interesting because I think education, you know, kind of doing the fundraising every time I have a conversation here to mission graduates, and their mission is to actually get more people to finish the graduation and formal education. And it's very transformative for, in my case, I was the first to go to college in my family. Once I went, I think other people in my family saw, oh, wow, this is interesting. Maybe it's a way to, you know, evolve and learn new things. So it's very interesting that you came from a very intellectual family. That's very important.
If I could say one thing to that, I love the fact that you're working with mission grads. And I think that's something we need to see. Because when people see others like them succeed, break through barriers, and pave a way forward, it makes it that much easier. Hey, this person is like me. I can resonate with their story. Maybe I too can go for that advanced degree, apply to a more prestigious company, and really pursue those careers. So I love that you're working with mission grads, and something very near and dear, getting people excited about education is something we're definitely about at Apple and Banana.
That's awesome. I love that. And I think having that mental model and that example in your family is very important. So I can see how, you know, education, a lot of conversations I have here, a lot of people, like the idea of democratizing education. And I want to hear a little bit about Apple and Banana, because first of all, like, why did you start it? Like, why did you start, you thought like, hey, I want to build this?
It started back when I was trying to get into UX. So when I graduated, I jumped right into the healthcare space because everyone told me, if you want to help people, boom, that's where you go. I was at two different healthcare companies and I hated it. I started actually meditating because I was just so stressed going to work. People got reduced to numbers on spreadsheets. So I was sitting with a lot of data and I missed the human side of my undergrad because I studied psychology with a focus on experimental design and applied statistics.
And how was that transition? Just curious about that too.
It was actually a really good transition because I disliked what I was doing every day at work. So the moments that I could steal for a quick article, listen to a podcast, or maybe even walk up to someone and say, hey, I'm working on this thing, trying to do this thing called usability testing. I have a design here. Can you talk to me about it? And everyone that I talked to was very generous. And all they would say is, I'll look at your little project here, but can I eat my soup? Right? They're like, can I just give some feedback? And so the transition was great. It gave me a lot of motivation to kind of pursue this further. And for me, I spent a lot of time networking, having conversations, consuming a lot of different media. There's so much free content. I knew about boot camps. I knew I could have gone back to school for an advanced degree. And I was like, let me just drain all of the free resources first, which will never happen because we're consistently adding great content like this into the community. And from there, I really wanted to apply everything. So the transition became easier. When I was interviewing, people could see, hey, I'm not just asking, can you hire me? Can you give me a job? Mm-hmm. It was more, this person went out and did something. So I was able to work with a small design firm in town. They wanted to build some sort of a mobile application around camping. Went out and we did some testing around it. We did some interviews. So they could see it wasn't just, I like people, please hire me as a researcher. It was, I'm living and breathing this as a craft. And it's only a matter of time before I break into the industry. And so if I had to give some quick, simple tips to anybody here at the start of their journey, trying to transition into an UX design, research, anything like that, three things come to mind. Number one, find a community and find a mentor within that community. They have challenged me in the best ways. Because in the beginning, I was just Googling over and over again, how do I become a researcher? What is the salary range for a researcher? What are the best methods? And it was the wrong way to do it. I got a mentor and they really challenged and they shaped my focus. Instead of me doing method after method, it's why this? Why didn't you do that? And the second tip would be,
did you have like one mentor that follow you through, or you just had like different mentors?
I would say multiple. I think they offered a very different set of expertise. And so some of them would really focus on the practice. How do I analyze data faster than what you might have in an academic setting? Others were around navigating office politics and getting UX a seat at the table as early as possible. So multiple mentors, very, very foundational. Big thank you to all of them, people that have supported me along my journey. And I would say the second tip is really about practice. As a person, as a manager now, and I'm hiring folks, the thing I'm looking for is practice, experience, getting out there. It doesn't mean you have to go out and solve all the world's problems like that, but can you go out and test something? Maybe your friend has a small business. Can you take a look at their site? Can you offer some feedback? Can you improve it that way? And then bring that to the interview. And I think that will quickly set you apart from, I'm really passionate about people. Most people in this space are pretty passionate about people. So that can set you apart and make you a much more exciting candidate for someone to interview.
Lovely. And yeah, and then like finishing the story here, like how did you start Apple and Banana, and why did you start it in the first place?
So Apple and Banana came out of that frustration. Before I had a mentor, before I had any of that guidance, I was frustrated by two big problems. Number one, good research content is all over the internet, right? Mm-hmm. You might find a great article on this site and a really powerful diagram or visualization over here. And they were everywhere. So I was like, I was always Googling, going to different sites, adding bookmarks. And the second one, coming from more of an academic background, a lot of research content in the UX space is very watered down. We focus on just methods and stakeholders and engagement and politics. And I think a lot of people are craving can we go deeper, right? Can you give me more appropriate scientific content that I can apply to work? And it's out of that frustration that Apple Banana was born. Can you come to one place where we cover a lot of topics, we go deeper beyond just methods and politics, and we try to bring craft into this instead of just the same content copy-pasted and reused over and over? So out of that frustration came the site, the entity that is now Apple and Banana, as you can see on the shirt.
Nice. They're lovely.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw the mascots. It was like, well, this is so nice. I really like that.
I want to say one thing. I take zero credit for the visual design. That is a talented team. I just offer some direction on what I would like things to look and feel. But shout out to Dana and Rishi on the team. Fantastic designers. And we truly try to empower them to do whatever the heck they want. Our one litmus test is, before we put something out, maybe an illustration or a design, does this make us laugh? Mm-hmm. If it makes us laugh, if we're giggling, let's put it out into the world. And so far, we've had a fantastic response.
Good metric.
Harder to track, but much more human.
Yeah. Very cool. And can you talk a little bit about the, you know, the fact that you're trying to make UXR more accessible and more easy to access? I remember, and I think you're, I don't know if you're planning to share this a little bit today, but you're planning a book out of the Apple and Banana too. Like, can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. Our foundational belief is that everyone can be a great researcher. Everyone can be Apple and Banana, right? If you go to our site, appleandbanana.org, you don't really see our faces on there. There's a lot of content out there, and we're like, it's not about us. It's about empowering the people that are coming to us, that they can believe in themselves and become great. And that's what our book is really about. It's about doing fruitful research, or research that really drives impact. Not, we did research on a checkbox. Hey, man, we're doing UX, right? It's really about, can we do really solid research that shapes the product, makes it real for people? And so the book is coming out of, everyone can be a great researcher. But as we were doing exploratory research around the book, what do we put in the book versus on the blog? Versus I also post some micro articles and threads on Twitter. So like, where do this content go? A lot of researchers out there feel alone. It's just me at my company by myself. Maybe I'm also doing design on the side and some development. And every stakeholder is looking at just you to say, Koji, you're the expert. What do I do? Give me that method. Give me that A/B testing. I need you to change the game. And a lot of researchers feel alone. So the book comes out of, everyone can be a great researcher, and this book can help you feel less alone. Can it sit on your desk and offer just enough guidance where we go a little deeper into analysis? We have an entire chapter just focused on data analysis, for qualitative and quantitative analysis. We also talk about reporting and driving impact. It's not just a deck, right? If you're waiting to give all of your insights at the deck time, you've already, the ship has sailed. Your team is making decisions now. So how do you give those insights in a really accurate and effective way throughout the process? So the book is supposed to be a culmination of a lot of different emotions within it. And how do we bring that to people?
All right, I think someone asked, like, when you're launching the book.
We want it out later this summer. We are a small team, and we're working with a very small publisher in Minneapolis. And what we're really trying to do is make the book feel fantastic. We have a really strong visual brand, but how does that manifest itself in the physical space? When you look and you feel and you touch it, can that also feel like Apple and Banana? A few weeks back, we had the entire team around my dining room table. We had a whole bunch of different paper samples and a whole bunch of cover designs, and we're looking at it. Like, which one feels like the most us? And a huge consideration for the book is, we want the paper to be so easy that you want to write on it. We build up a lot of white space in the margins, and we want your book to feel like your book. Fill it in with your ideas, with your insights. Bookmark and dog ear the pages and the chapters are meaningful to you, and we want you to have it over time. And so we've been doing a lot of research on the book as well, testing it, feeling it, making sure it feels like a resource that really feels supported, rather than maybe a book that you look nice on the shelf.
That's awesome. I love the interactivity part of the book. One thing that crossed my mind when we're talking about this is that a lot of teams and a lot of people are in a situation where they actually want to do research. They want to have a chance to talk with users, but they feel like, hey, you know, we don't have a researcher. Like, I'm the only designer in this team. I love to include research. I love to learn more about the users, but we don't have a researcher. What should I do? What's the advice you would give to me, for instance, if I'm working in a like 20 people startup and the only designer, so on and so forth?
I mean, the book also should hopefully support that person as well. But without relying too much on the book, the big thing I would say is really figure out what you're going to use that research for. I spend a lot of time with my senior stakeholders understanding, what are you going to do with this data? An example that we write in the book is about, would it be interesting to know that 99% of Cells and Pixels users love blue dinosaurs? That would be very interesting. Is that going to fundamentally change how Cells and Pixels behaves and what you do? Probably not, right? So a lot of stakeholders come to you, wouldn't that be interesting? Okay, let's imagine we have that data. What are we going to do now? And if you're really not going to use it, you really don't want to set out on that journey. You only have a limited number of opportunities to do fantastic research. So can you figure out what those are? Can you be confident in how it's going to be used? If you know that, every other decision becomes so much easier. We actually wrote a small article around this about the three questions that you want to ask when you're getting a research request. And so we have that on the blog, but really simply it's, what are you planning to do? What information will help you take or avoid taking that decision? And then number three is, write a research plan, and does this research plan need to change? If you can figure out those three, you're going to set yourself up for success. It is a bit generic here on a podcast. We dive a little deeper, but I think if you can understand how it's going to be used, every decision gets easier. And then your team looks at you like, wow, that was super impactful. We actually use that in our decision-making process, and things get a lot more smooth.
Makes sense. So thinking about the why and the question you want to ask, the type of problem you're trying to solve, it's very important. Good point. Thank you. And what do you think is special about UX people? Like, what do you think is our superpower, and how, you know, thinking about this only designer, only UX person in a team of 20, what is the one thing that this person can do differently?
I think the low-hanging fruit is around empathy, right? Empathy for the user. I think we all know that in this field. I would like to challenge it and say this superpower isn't necessarily a superpower that you're born with it, but you can develop it over time. And to me, the superpower that UX people have is clarity. Right? A lot of products out there shouting to get in front of people. We got the latest feature. We got this and that. I think UX people bring clarity to the decision-making process. Why are we doing 30,000 things? Are they actually being used? Are they helping us? Or are they actually helping the people that we're building for? So I think UX people challenge people, help make them feel uncomfortable, and figure out the direction they want to go. And then the team really gets aligned on, this is what's important to us, the people we're building for, and how this can impact them. I think clarity is so powerful. And some of my favorite researchers, people like Greg Bernstein, people like Nakia at Twitter, they talk a lot about that and bringing that to the table. I think it's the best superpower, but it can be developed with time, with experience, with feedback.
Got it. That's very cool. And you work in large companies like Best Buy, Facebook. How do you see research playing the role of innovation in the story of these companies?
Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, research and innovation kind of go hand in hand, right? Because innovation is really about the future. It's really about unmet needs. We're doing this now, but where could we go? What's the direction that we could take? So I think research plays a big part in that, but I don't think it's necessarily confined to big companies. Some of the smallest startups that I've worked with are doing fantastic research, and they're innovating in a smaller, more tight problem space, which I think is fantastic. At Facebook, though, I wound up leading a team of 10 to Argentina for 2 weeks for some exploratory field research. We really wanted to understand, what is the evolution of the group's product? Because I was on the group's product. What does that look like, right? How do you get a digital community to look, to feel more like a physical community? And now in a time of COVID, that physical connection is even more important. So in Argentina, we wound up going to a lot of different participants' homes, figuring out what their day in their life is like, how they find connection, how technology intersects with different cultures. Because in the Bay Area, technology and culture is one way. If you go to Argentina, if you go to India, if you go to Japan, it's all different. How does that come together? And I think we came out of some really strong findings. And a lot of our stakeholders, and including, I believe, the VP of the group's product was there. And we had a ton of great research, great insights coming out of that. And I think that changed the way we look at the future. It's not just buttons. It's not just screens. It's more about immersive experiences with people coming together. So That's what I would say.
Got it. Okay, we talked about small companies, bigger companies. I want to go back to the small again, because I think it's a very common scenario where, you know, you don't have a researcher. Like, do you recommend, like, as you said, everyone should be a researcher. Do you recommend that the designer do the research in some cases where you don't have a researcher? Like, what's your ideal way to solve for a team that doesn't have a researcher?
Mm-hmm. I personally lean into the category that designers can and should do their own research, but I think it should be very tightly scoped. If there is a researcher, can they partner up on a usability test or a couple of interviews? The reason I say that is twofold. If you champion the designers to kind of take in charge of their own evaluative or validation type research, I think it's fantastic. They're moving faster, and you're opening up your space as a researcher for bigger, more ambiguous type problem.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about usability testing, validation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even with some interviews, I think there's a lot to be said about shorter, more frequent qualitative studies. I think we talk a lot about quant methods, A/B testing, experimental design, powerful methods. But if you only have 10 people visit your site per month, per week, your A/B test, right? You're going to spend more time setting it up than getting value out of it. So for me, the smaller teams, I think they can do a lot, especially if you're thinking about more frequent qualitative studies. And it's really not about methods. I know a lot of designers that I work with and I talk with, they're talking about, like, what's the best method? What's the next best method? What do I use this tool for? And to me, when I hear that, I think about how the best basketball player isn't the player with the most shoes, right? LeBron James isn't one of the world's best because he's got dozens of shoes. He probably has 5 or 6 shoes that he's really optimized, and he knows when and when not to use those shoes. And I think that's the way that anyone at a small company should think about. And we talk about this in our book, that we believe that there's 3 methods that could cover probably 95% of any research situation you find yourself in. Semi-structured interviews, really quick survey design, and some form of qualitative or quantitative usability testing. If you can get really good at those and champion yourself and your team around those, you can move faster, big team or small. Everyone is going to be able to understand what those methods are. I can easily explain them to any stakeholder at the tippy top or someone on the local level. They're going to be like, you're going to go talk to some people? Okay, that makes sense. I'm on board. Let's get this research going. So for smaller teams, focus on the problems, focus on a small set of methods, and really try to diversify and split up who can and who can't do what.
We're getting to the end here. So thanks for your time, Varun. Thanks for sharing your knowledge here. And if you have any last words or something you want to share your links again. It's your space.
Yeah, I think somebody here did post our correct Twitter handle at AppleBananaUX. We're also on Instagram, but we're a little bit more active now on Twitter. AppleBanana.org is our community, is our blog. And then last things I want to say, the book is going well. We're a smaller team, and it is a challenging process, but we want the book out by the summer. The best part of the book is really understanding what I know. One of the things I've learned is If you want to be smart, read a book. If you want to feel really dumb, write a book. It's so humbling and it challenges every idea that I have, but we're at a really good place with it, wanted out by the summer. And the other thing is, we're really excited about the future of Apple and Banana. We have a bunch of ideas of what we want to do next. Two big things that we're really focused on is around community. There's a lot of communities out there, maybe some with 10,000, 15,000 people. Can we create a smaller community where people are having more conversation, more engagement, and it feels more manageable instead of everybody talking at the same time? And the second one is really around content. Apple and Banana right now, our bread and butter is text and images. Can we evolve? Can we do more audio, video? We've got some ideas for something long form. We got ideas for something short. Can we give good content in the right time at the right place in a bunch of different media styles? That's something we're really excited about.
I would love an augmented reality filter, by the way, for Apple and Banana. They're so cool.
I mean, I'm not the designer. I'm my design team.
Okay, I just submitted a suggestion.
Fantastic. But yeah, no. Thank you for having me on. This is a fantastic show. I've listened to so many of these episodes. The one with Felix was fantastic, with Jesse James Garrett. I listened to that twice because I really liked his ideas. And I love what you're doing here. I think this is a fantastic community, and I'm excited to see Salsa Pickles continue to grow up, continue to blow up in this space.
Awesome. I appreciate. Thank you so much for your time, and have a great rest of your week. And thanks everybody who joined us today.
Thanks, Koji. Thanks for everyone for the fantastic questions. And reach out if you would like. Have a great rest of your week. Bye.
Bye.
My name is Koji, and this is Cells and Pixels. Thanks for listening.